Ja, hallo, freut mich, dass es so voll ist. I've seen some guys whom I've just have heard speaking French and English. So, shall I switch to English for the talk? Okay, so I take that as a yes. So the slides are in German, sorry, but I think works anyway. What I want to talk about today. It's basically, I don't want to show you SSH basics. I want you to show you what else you can do with it, the surroundings, the nice tools, the nice hacks, what's all in there, but people don't know. So, okay, yet another chair. And everything I show you should work with a OpenSSH 4.3. I've tested it like 10 years ago with 5.1. And apropos of 10 years ago, we are establishing a tradition today because this is the third time I'm giving this talk at COSIN, always with 5 years in between. So, yeah, the first one was in 2009. So the current version of OpenSSH is 8.0, released in April someone. Debian 10 Buster will ship with 7.9 because when 8.0 was released, was already Buster was already frozen. So I've changed the order of the talk compared to the last two times. Because I want to show more of the tools around, because that's where we got new things. And I will show then, as much time allows, some onboard stuff which is available in OpenSSH vanilla. So, first, what's new in recent OpenSSH versions? 8.0 is a feature release and also a security bug release. It also was said to have a lot of internal refactoring. Yeah, one security fix, and they dropped one old syntax in use only in a few points in the SSH daemon, where it could say IP address slash port number. And this was meant to help IPv6 users because the colon is already in use there. But in the meanwhile, the established syntax is with square brackets and works well. And the slash syntax has been confused with CIDR network masks too, so they kicked it out. Then we have the first release with a qu post-quantum cryptography key exchange included. I have no idea what exactly they mean with a combination on between two algorithms or something. So, yeah, and they raised the default RSA key length to 3K. And they introduced the dash J option for proxy jump. We're coming later to that. Also with the SCP and SFTP command line tools. Before, it was only available in SSH. Then in other recent versions, there were a few things which are nice additions too. So on the one hand, you can now specify port numbers by service names. So you can say port number, for example, if you connect to an HTTPS port, why that's might be possible, we'll come later to that. You can say dash P for port and then HTTPS instead of 443. So that's new since 7.9. Then the format in which private keys are written has changed in 7.8. So the default format, it's backward compatible to versions since 2014, but since you're usually using that SSH daemon, where you're generating the key on, shouldn't be an issue. And then since 7.7 and hence included in Debian Buster, You have the first post-quantum cryptography algorithms for encryption in SSH. And then in 7.7, they also kicked out support for connecting to ancient SSH implementations, which are were published before the SSH RFCs came out, so like 18 years ago. So shouldn't harm most of us either, unless we have like some hardware firmware which SSH which offers SSH, like some old Sun Spark firmwares. In that case, my recommendation, use PuTTY, also available on Linux. Yeah, you might know Screen and Tmux. It's very helpful together with SSH, especially because you can run applications or clients long time and always connect from some other machine via SSH and then reconnect to the session. Screen is the older one. It's actually older than Linux because it started in the BSD world. And Tmux is the newer one, trying to clean up some things. It's more colorful, but and it at some points has more features, and some other points it has less features, like no serial console support. So. Then a little bit closer to SSH is Auto SSH. Auto SSH works nice with Screen together, but the nice feature is it opens two tunnels in addition to the shell session. One tunnel in the one direction connects on the other end to its own tunnel in the other direction, and regularly sends data through and see if that comes through. If not, it kills the SSH and restarts it with the same command line options. And if you use dash capital RD, which means give me a screen session, either connect to one or start a new one. And if there's a non-detached one, detach that one. So you always get a screen session with that command, and you get reconnected usually to the same one if the connection was interrupted and or has been killed by auto SSH. So that's really nice. That's basically the way I read my mails. Mosh. In the meanwhile, many of you might have heard of it. It started as, I think, PhD project or something at MIT. It's an alternative for interactive shells over high latency connections. So if you have a bad mobile connection over GSM, Edge, something, or even satellite, if possible, you might recognize that SSH is horrible to use if you're typing longer texts or commands, because you don't see what you type unless the bits have passed once through and back. With Mosh, both sides, client and server, maintain a state of the screen, and you immediately see what you type in Mosh. With some intelligence, it knows that it doesn't have to show control characters. It knows that if that backspace erases characters and goes one back, and it tries to guess what the application on the other side might do. It probably doesn't work that well with VI, but it works well with shell, more or less, and it's nice if you type texts like emails or so, because you notice if you have made a typo and you can even fix it, at least with backspace if it's not too far away. And you even if the data hasn't been received on the other side. Actually, there was even a request, or more or less a support request on a Mosh mailing list like a year ago. If it would be able to raise the time to live thingy, and because they want to do shell connections to the moon. So and basically You just had to change like a few lines of code, and it should be able to work even in a setup where you have a lag of minutes. But yeah. For example, try it. You have the license, I know. No, and it uses UDP, but the initial authentication and authorization is done over SSH. So the first thing it does, it makes an SSH connection and starts its own server program on the remote side, which needs to be installed already. And then that one says, okay, I'm listening on UDP port and that IP. And then the real mesh connection starts if the connection over UDP works. So you have all authentication and authorization possibilities of SSH, but none of the forwarding features yet. That's a long time feature request, and I assume they will get something in there, although it's primarily meant for interactive usage. So I usually use it if I'm on the train and in tunnels to read my mail instead of auto SSH. Yeah, and it's thought to be modern only. It only supports UTF-8, no legacy encodings. SSHFS. That's basically a possibility to mount files from a SSH server with Fuse. So it works on Mac, it works on Linux. No idea about Windows, maybe with Windows subsystem for Linux. It's often more comfortable for me than to do some SMB mount magic I don't understand on Linux. Works as long as the SSH connection is there. So usually needs a reliable connection. SSLH is a nice demultiplexer, which allows you to run a web server and an SSH daemon on the same port, especially an HTTPS server. The general idea is that because the protocols look quite different, they decide on the first few bytes what kind of connection it is and forward it to either the web server running then on a different port or the SSH server. So you can have a completely normal looking HTTPS server, but you can SSH to it and you'll get a connection too. That's very nice if you are in some Wi-Fi which has castrated all the ports and only allows port 80 and 443, so you still get home via SSH. I had to use that quite a few times, and that's the one point where I can say now -p HTTPS instead of 443. There are two implementations of it. One is in Perl and one is in C, and Debian ships the C written one, which is the newer one, and seems to be more performant. Then something I recently found shipped in Buster, so it's only available from Debian 10 and maybe recent Ubuntu releases, but of course you can always compile stuff yourself. SSH tools is a set of tools which either queries SSH or does nice things over SSH. SSH diff just makes a normal diff between a local and a remote file. SSH facts does a remote login and runs things like LSB release and checks a few other things and returns in a machine readable way what kind of operating system is running there, which release, which SSH version, whatever. SSH host keys is also a nice thing, which usually if you connect by SSH, it shows you one host key and with only one fingerprint. This tool shows you all host keys with two fingerprints, one with the old MD5, which is used by old SSH versions, and the new SHA-256. So you can easily see all the host keys without having to fiddle with SSH options and connect like 6 times or so. SSH ping really does something like ping just on port 22. So it really sends a ping every second and shows you latency, the latency, round trip time, etc. Well, an SSH version just shows the remote SSH banner, which you can also do with Netcat, but then you need to do something like echo single quote pipe Netcat. This one is just more comfortable. So yeah, another recent tool I found is SSH audit, which shows you metadata about the cryptographic part of an SSH server. It gives colored output, and the color is usually helpful to see which algorithms shouldn't be used anymore because they are known to be weak or even insecure. The example you see here is from a standard Debian stretch. So I can't remember that I have changed anything with regards to algorithms there. But yeah, the list is much more longer. I just had to find a way between too small and everything on the screen. So would be unreadable. Probably is unreadable back there. But you see the colors at least and can try it your own. It's readable, okay. Then alternative SSH servers. There's not only OpenSSH. Of course, there are commercial servers. Tectia or so, what SSH.com is called nowadays. But there are several free servers. Dropbear is probably the most known one. It's very well known in the embedded scene. So you have that one usually on OpenWRT or some Apple products. And also has some of the OpenSSH features, but not all. So for example, it doesn't have SFTP support by default. Then there's LSH, which is the project to re-implement or to implement SSH v2 protocol stack server as well as client under GPL, because OpenSSH is under BSD license. Some people are not happy with that. So the main feature is the license. And then there's Tiny SSH, which is a minimalistic SSH server, only SSH v2, only a subset of the features. And the nice thing is only modern cryptography and only key-based login. No password login possible. So that's really nice. And even supports already some of the post-quantum algorithms. So yeah, and it doesn't require OpenSSL either. So there is an option to compile it with a NACL library, but it ships also its own library similar to they say compatible with NACL. I'm not sure what that exactly means. SSH is not only for Unix. There are quite some clients for Windows. Well, Cygwin also ships OpenSSH server. In the meanwhile, we have a Windows subsystem for Linux where you also can get SSH, of course. But there are some native Windows clients. PuTTY is probably well known, but PuTTY is not only for Windows. You can also get it in Debian, apt-get install PuTTY. And WinSCP is probably the most well-known file copy client with SSH in the back. Actually, it uses PuTTY code, if I remember correctly. Then again, Dropbear, because it also contains a client implementation. Can even have that on iPhone or Apple TV. It's built in DreamWorks. It's in the Turris Omnia, in OpenWRT. Many network as a storage devices have it. And there's even an SSH client for the Sony PlayStation Portable, for those who still remember that. also uses Dropbear code. And yeah, even Java implementation of SSH for Java Mobile Edition capable mobile phones. And there is a PuTTY implementation for Symbian. I guess that's probably no one using anymore nowadays, but yeah. And for Android, you have ConnectBot, for example. There are several forks of it. I have no idea which one is the one you should use nowadays. ConnectBot.org, this website still exists, so I guess, yeah. So that's mostly for the tools around. So let's have a look at what comes already with on board. On the one hand, what I always consider important, but which hasn't been, well, how should I say? Many people just don't care if SSH asks about the fingerprint. They just say yes and fine. So like trust on first use. But it's actually not that difficult to get the fingerprint. So if SSH asks for some host key, it usually tells us the algorithm of the host key. So we look in etc SSH directory, and then SSH underscore host underscore algorithm underscore key dot pub or not is not important. And as but unless you're doing that as user, because only user can only access the .pub file. And with SSH keygen dash L for list fingerprints and dash F for file, you can always check those fingerprints. And if they fit, you know you're connected to the right server. You can, for example, use out of band management like some BMC or IMM, KVM, whatever. For example, after installation, or you can log in from another machine, which also already knows the host key, or you can get the host keys from the sysadmin. For example, Debian has all its host keys in a file over HTTPS, and as long as you trust the HTTPS certificate, which is more than trusting nobody, having no trust in the key at all. And you can store that in the .ssh directory as known hosts 2. Historically, known hosts and known hosts 2 were for, I think, two different generations of SSH. And luckily, both are still read by current OpenSSH versions. So you have two files. And one you can use, for example, for automatic stuff, and the other one for manually used stuff. But there's also a project called OpenSSH Known Hosts, not by OpenSSH, but, well, yeah. And can I get the... what is below here is just URL equals and then the URL from the above. This is a file. Config file for OpenSSH known hosts, which tells the tool which plugin to use. Well, curl, just download it. Which exit codes to ignore, and what it should fetch. And then it fetches from all the configured sources all the known host files, and generate one single known host file, which is read in addition to your own known host file. This is nice if you have several organizations you work with and they all provide such a downloadable list of known hosts. Nice thing is also because usually the host names are hashed in there, you can publish this file without showing to the world all your host names. So, another possibility is if you have DNSSEC. That means signed DNS entries. You can also publish your SSH fingerprints on DNS, and you can tell SSH to use them. So this is a command to generate them. It actually generates entries which you can just copy and paste into a bind zone file. And this is how you query them manually. So you need to type SSH FP for fingerprint and then the host name. And you, here you see how they look like. This column is the type of key. So like, is it RSA, ECDSA? And well, yeah, here again, the line is a little bit cut at the moment. It's just the same as above with an actual host name behind. So using keys, actually, you don't want to enter your password every time you log in via SSH. You're using SSH if you do a git push. You're using SSH if you do backups with rsync. You want to do that without having to type in your password every time. So one nice thing are SSH keys. It's asymmetric encryption. It's with also called public key cryptography. You have a private key. You have a public key. Usually, you put the public key on the remote machine into a file in a .ssh directory called authorized underscore keys. It's usually the length and type of the key. Then the key and at the end some comment, for example, from which host this key is and user. And then you can use the private key to log in onto that machine. If the private and the public key matches. So usually, if you create such a key pair, you should use a passphrase to save, to secure the private key. You usually have to enter this passphrase once per login session. Depends if you're on X or Wayland, you're entering it probably when you log in, after you have logged in directly. If you're on a shell, until you log out or so. There's also a nice tool, if you can log in by password, you can use SSH copy ID, which does copy your public keys from your local machine onto the remote machine into the proper file, and you need a different authentication mechanism. So, for example, password needs to be enabled for that, or a key fetched from a remote location. To have that in memory during the session, you need a SSH agent running. That's on the most Linux distributions, that's done by default if installed and you're logging into a graphical session. There are some commands to list the fingerprints currently saved in SSH agent in the memory. So they are unencrypted in the memory, but encrypted on disk. And you can even fetch a key from the disk on a different machine if you SSH into it, you want the terminal and still run a different application than the shell, and you want to forward the agent. So that way I can use my work key for my workstation without having it, for example, for my laptop, without having it stored on the laptop. It's then only in the memory of the laptop. And as soon as I close that session, it's gone again. Yeah? Yes. Yeah. So the comment was that the SSH agent forwarding works in both ways. So I can fetch a remote key as well as I can use my local key on a remote machine. So for example, for multiple hops. There are also alternative SSH agents. You can, for example, store your SSH keys in the GNUPG agent. You can use the GNOME keyring. For KDE, there's the K-Wallet. And there you need some glue tools, K-Wallet command line interface, which is a third-party tool, and GPG agent in addition, as it seems. So, and you can even lock your SSH agent temporarily. If you, for example, want to give a colleague a shell to fix something, but need to go to the toilet, he can't use your SSH keys, but they are all in the memory still, and you until you unlock them later with the same password phrase you entered initially to lock them. General options dash capital A is forward the agent, so that I have the agent available on the remote side, or dash cap lowercase a, don't forward the agent if you have it enabled it by default for that host, for example. And this is the SSH underscore config snippet if you want to enable the agent forwarding for two domains, for example. So yeah, well, file transfer with onboard tools. SSH client usually comes with SCP for secure copy, which has the user interface of RCP, which was an unencrypted remote copy from old Unix times, where encryption was unimportant and authentication was like host-based and maybe identity-based. So it has not consistent user interface with SSH. Like the dash P for port is there dash capital P because dash P is already was in use from RSH, pardon. And then there's also SFTP, which has an FTP command line client-like interface. So it starts its local kind of shell, and you say copy that file from here to there. Like LS is the remote LS, and LLS for local LS is the local directory. So it just mimics the old FTP command line interface, but uses SSH as a transport layer. And what is important to say here, SFTP support needs to be needs to exist on a remote server because it's its own subsystem. It's not in the core of SSH. And for example, Dropbear doesn't have that subsystem, but you can use the OpenSSH SFTP subsystem with Dropbear if you want. That's the reason why they split it out the SFTP subsystem into its own package in Debian a while ago. Yeah, that's the config file. The main page is ssh underscore config, but the config file is just .ssh slash config. A few nice entries. Hash known hosts means if I say yes, the host names are not there in plain text, but as a hash, so you can't figure out to which hosts I connect. Malware actually does that. So they tries to see where can I connect from here and looks into that known hosts file, and if it's not hashed, it might try to use maybe some not password secured SSH keys to log in there. And this no host authentication for local host, if you have a home shared with several machines, like for home on NFS, for example, localhost always has a different host key, depending on which workstation you're sitting. And this setting says ignore the host key if it's localhost. Not the ho I think it looks really at the IP address, not only at the host name. Then you can make short aliases. If you have a long host name, you can say, okay, if I want to connect to SIM, actually connect to SIMLink to NO1.org, to agent forwarding and to X forwarding. Or you can even specify a combination of user and host name. So if I just say SSH SF, I get a connection to shell sourceforge.net with a username extern. And this is a hack which is also possible, but probably not recommended for general purpose. If you have a mobile, well, no, if you have a detachable network card, and host name IP addresses are given MAC address based. So the MAC address is always the same because it's inside the detachable card. But you connect it to maybe different machines. You may want to have no warning and also not saving those host keys. I'm using that only the hostname might hint that with an old PCM CIA card I'm using in two machines. So I'm only using them in my local network. And so, yeah, at that point, I don't care. But that's really a I don't care setting. Then there are configure commands, proxy command and proxy jump. Proxy command is in there for quite a while. Basically, if you said for this the host, please use the proxy command, whatever, then it expects that whatever makes a standard in, standard out connection to your SSH server. And it still does host key verification because that's might be completely unencrypted. So a typical way to connect to a host behind a jump host or gateway is to connect to the gateway first, then call netcat, which does basically standard in, standard out over the network with TCP, and connect to my home server port 22. At some point, the SSH developers noticed, well, that's used quite often, and netcat is always several implementations, different options, and sometimes it's flaky. I had like hundreds of SSH sessions still running because netcat wasn't exiting properly. So they introduced -W option, which says just connect TCP plain to that port, that host name. So that came with OpenSSH 5.4. And because that is often used with just port 22, because you actually want to SSH to the next machine, they even introduced proxy jump as option, which does exactly the same as line above, but you only have to give the hostname and it knows how to do the rest. And there's also command line option for that. It's -J. And you can even specify multiple such gateways, which is difficult with proxy command a bit, separated by comma. So you can say first jump to that one, then to that one, and then to the final one. For example, if you have like a company firewall and then inside the team a firewall again, I need to go to some server behind that. Those features are only available since recently, 7.3, but very nice. Needed very often. Unfortunately. Another thing is, which I don't use very often, but might be interesting, control master and control path. Well, yeah, control master is a setting where you can use one single SSH connection, so one TCP stream, but internally it's multiple streams. So you can have several SSH sessions over the same TCP connection. Because some SSH servers are rather picky and only allow one single SSH session. And you can't then do some SCP, like copying files from the machine back and forth. And with that setting, the first connection is the master, and every other connection uses the same TCP stream and doesn't open a new connection. Might also be helpful if you have a firewall, which if it sees too many connections, even if successful in a short time, it will block you. Seen that, helps too. On the other hand, it's a little bit annoying in some other cases. So since I don't have such firewalls or where I'm working, I don't need that setting. But yeah. So then some general reminder: tunnels. Okay. Well, yeah. I should go forward quickly. Tunneling is not evil. It's good. It saves your privacy. and even it's for your own security. I'll skip a few parts. We have especially one part which I will show you. This one, SOX proxy. SSH is able to open a locally a SOX proxy. So you can, for example, tell your browser, my SOX proxy is localhost port 1080. And then it makes every connection over the SOX proxy. And a SOX proxy means you get a connection, but first have to tell where you want to go. So you say, like, I want to go to that IP and that port number. Please make me a TCP connection. And all those connections come out on the other end of the SSH connection as if you were surfing from there. Might be nice if you want to look some German TV shows and have some server at some German data center like Hetzner or so. You can tell your browser, well, use that SOX proxy, surf from Germany. Be careful, DNS requests by default don't go over it. Unless you're using at least SOX protocol 4a. I think nowadays SOX protocol 5 is the most common one, but just be reminded that it wasn't always like this, and old programs might have issues. Well, I'm skipping VPN because it's rather ugly anyway. One nice feature is SSH has some kind of escape key. It's the escape key is actually a combination. It's enter and a tilde. So if you press enter and a tilde, usually over an SSH connection, nothing happens. Unless you press a second tilde or any non-command key. So usually that only happens if you press enter after command on a command line and then want to call a command from your home directory. And the only combinations which do something are well, tilde, tilde gives you a tilde. Might be confusing, but it's the escape from the escape. Tilde dot is the most useful one. Just terminate that SSH connection. Be careful if you have several behind each other. You need to think of how many tildes you have to type. Like if you want to kill the third connection, you have to type like four times because, And you can even suspend your SSH session with tilde control Z and or send the SSH into background with tilde ampersand, and you even get a help with tilde question mark. And there are a few more, like list all port forwardings and stuff. But yeah, we'll skip that one. Same. That's the summary, basically. SSH is much more than just logging in on the command line on a remote server. You can tons of nice stuff with it. You can drill through firewalls. You can drill through castrated Wi-Fis, whatever. Tunnels are important, not evil. And you don't get SSH only on Linux boxes. And then there's three slides with links from things I mentioned. But I'll skip that now too, more or less. The URL for PSP SSH is so long that I had to abbreviate it. Important, you get all the slides on this URL on the bottom. So you can look up all the links there, and I hope that I'm now more or less in time. Sorry for the speed talk. Thanks. And well, if you have questions, ideas, what else I couldn't put in here, I'm still here for until tomorrow afternoon. So I hope. There was in every something new for nearly everyone. Okay, no more time for questions. So let's stop here and get to the next talk from Rexnor about his Ascension project. It's about putting DNS zones from a bind into the GNUnet independent DNS network. I don't know. I'll have to listen to the talk too.